You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. I'm Craig Garber, host of the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. What you may not know about me is that I'm also the author of the book, How to Make Maximum Money with Minimum Customers. And since March of 2000, I've been running a busy marketing consulting firm. During this time, I've helped over 300 clients in 108 different industries all over the world sell everything from $20 books to $5,000 seminar seats and everything in between. Now, if you own or operate a business, ask yourself the following marketing-related questions and be brutally honest with your answers. Do you have an email list of prospects and customers, but you have no idea what to say to them, how often to say it, or how to make money with this list? Is your business website consistently generating new leads and making sales? Is it making you any money at all? If not, do you know why? Is your advertising effective? Is it consistently making you money? And do you know how to use social media effectively to market your business? If any one of these questions are puzzling you, then you need to book a one-on-one marketing strategy session with me if your business qualifies. After this strategy session, you'll know how to speak to and make money with your email list, how to use your website to attract customers and clients who are ready to buy from you now, and how to sell your goods and services for top dollar and at much higher profit margins than your competition. Listen, stop hoping things will get better on their own. Hope is not a very good business strategy. Instead, book a marketing strategy session with me by going to everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing and find out if your business meets the 5 criteria you need to qualify for this service. Again, that's everyonelovesguitar.com/marketing. Thank you for listening, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody, this is Craig Garber from Everyone Loves Guitar, and we've got a really cool, very interesting guest with us today. She's 26 years old. She was born in Madrid, Spain, to a Dutch father and a half-Italian, half-Peruvian mom. She moved cities and countries most of her life until her teens when her folks settled in a small town called Lucca in Italy. She started playing music at age 5 with the violin in London, slowly transformed into guitar thanks to meeting Dave Stewart at the age of 6 or 7. After finishing her bachelor's degree, she left to do a music degree in Guildford? Am I pronouncing that right?
Yep.
Because the D is silent. Yeah, right. Guildford, England. And she started touring with artists and bands once she got there as a session player while starting to create her own band. None of them kicked off till Bones happened, and she partnered up with Rosie Bones, and they both partnered up with a guy named Jeff Beck. And they worked on Jeff Beck's album. They played on Jeff Beck's album, Loud Hailer. Then they toured with Jeff for a year after the release of the album. And she got to work with some incredible musicians and people. Now back to working on Bones and living in L.A. and enjoying the sun. We are so lucky to have with us today Carmen Vandenberg, who's absolutely a very sweet person. Hey, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Well, no, thank you.
You're welcome. Hey, so let's start from the beginning here. You said you moved around a lot as a child. What was that about? Was like your dad in the military or something? Or
No, not quite. Although I used to get that question a lot. Well, people assumed my dad was in the military. I think my dad was a chemical engineer, and it's pretty simple. When the company moved, we moved, and you know, it was interesting to say the least.
Very cool. So I looked up, because I didn't actually know what Lucca, you know, where it was. I looked it up. It's a good-sized city, it looks like, in the northwestern part of Italy. Is that somewhat correct?
It's we call it central Italy, because Tuscany is more like, you know, the north consider themselves different from the center, and then the south is something else. So it's kind of like central Italy. And I guess you could call it a city because it spreads out quite a bit, but it's technically it's still a town because there's no university, there's no airport. It's surrounded by ancient walls that you can cycle on, medieval walls.
That's pretty cool. So what was your childhood like growing up over there? What was life like in general?
In retrospective, looking back on it now, it was pretty beautiful. I think I'm quite happy I grew in a small place as opposed to a town, like a big city. So I think I would have gotten into much more trouble if I lived in a bigger city. And, you know, our grandparents were there, and it was a beautiful place to grow up. I mean, my parents, not only did they move in a small town, they moved 20 minutes away from the small town up in the hills.
Oh, wow.
So I was surrounded by just trees and old people, but and a church that we didn't go to. But it was more like, I guess that's why I had time to practice because there wasn't much to do other than read books and play guitar and get lost in the woods. But, yeah.
That's really different. So, like, having lived all these places, do you speak multiple languages?
Yeah, 4.5.
What do you speak? Italian, English?
Spanish and French, if fluent. And then Dutch is, I can understand it. I can't really speak it because I never lived in Holland. So my father didn't really want to impose it on us.
Wow, that's very cool that you could speak 4.5 languages.
I'd say 4.25. It's probably more accurate.
Okay. We want to be accurate, so let's do that. 4.25. do you think from having lived in a bunch of different places, like, that helped shape or form some of your outlook on life in general, having moved so much? Not necessarily bad, but, I mean, good, bad, or otherwise. How did that maybe impact you, if at all?
No, it definitely did. I mean, it was difficult at times, you know, when you move around as a kid, you have to change school, change friends, change languages, change whatever sport you're doing, you know. But I guess it was challenging and it kind of gives you a bit of a thicker skin. And then, you know, now it's basically who I am. Like, I love change and I love to move around. And I guess that's why touring life suits me. I'm probably quite...
That's what I was thinking when you said that.
Yeah, and I've always thought about this, like, if and when I have kids, I'd like to move them around maybe once or twice just so, you know, to broaden their knowledge and the world and whatnot, but maybe not just quite as many times as I had.
Sure, sure. Yeah, but especially, I'm sorry, go ahead. I apologize.
No, that's great.
With all your, like, citizenships and stuff that you have, that's nice that you could probably take advantage and do that. You know, you can move them to London or some suburb in England, and then you can move them to nice countryside in Italy or something like that, you know, without having to deal with any stress or, you know, passport crap.
Oh, no, I'd probably try and venture somewhere where I haven't been.
Good point.
Yeah. Like, for example, this tour we just did, I got to see so many parts of America. It blew my mind that I'd never seen.
What did you like? What parts did you like the best that you've seen?
I love nature, so I really fell in love with landscapes in Montana, to be honest.
Yeah, it's pretty there. I've been there, actually.
It's, like, so grandiose and overwhelming sometimes, you know.
Have you seen the Pacific Northwest at all? Like, you know, Oregon, Seattle, Oregon, just a little further west of Montana, like Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, I've been to Washington a few times, yeah.
Yeah, and even Idaho, it's living in Florida is completely flat, like really flat. So I'd never been there. We went there, I don't know, about 8 or 9 years ago. I really loved it. It was beautiful, you know, the mountains and everything. Yeah, I thought it was cool. Very peaceful.
I lived in Florida as a kid.
Did you? Where?
I lived in Miami for 2 years.
Oh, that's like not really even Florida. That's like the wild, wild west of Florida.
I don't really remember it. I mean, I didn't get to live the Miami life. I was like from 9 till 11. So,
yes.
You know, my weekend would be cycling to the candy shop.
Right. Yeah. It was, it's not like the rest of Florida. I mean, it's not bad. It's just, you know, are you only child or your brothers and sisters?
I have two younger sisters. We're called the Three C's. Carmen, Claudia, Carla.
That's funny. That's really cool. Are any of them in music?
No. No. They both did play instruments. Our parents always wanted us to venture within music. But then they went their own way, their own paths.
Do they live in Italy still, or are they other places and scattered?
They both live in Amsterdam now. The little one kind of just moved there. Claudia's been in Holland for the past 5 years.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So you meet Dave Stewart at age 6 or 7. Like, how did that happen? Was like random Dave Stewart walking in for the guitar lesson? I mean, what was the deal? That's kind of wild.
Yeah, absolutely wild. When I was, I think I moved to London when I was 5. Didn't really speak English, and my parents put me in an international school, you know, for kids that are from all over the place, or like kids that have parents that move a lot. And this boy came a few months after me during the class. His name was Django Stewart, and we were like the two little weird kids sitting in the back of the classroom, and we became best friends. And
wow.
And I just, like, my parents were quite open minded. Like, they'd let me just run off to some stranger's house and have play dates. And, you know, only a few months after I'd been hanging out with Django and obviously his dad, did my parents one day come and pick me up in Covent Garden. And obviously my mum was shell shocked when she opened the door, and, you know, being a big Eurythmics fan, found herself face to face with Dave.
That's so funny.
And I had no idea. Of course, I was only like 6. I was just running around, you know, playing with their furniture. But yeah, so I remember just seeing these guitars and being amazed by them. And then we used to busk on the street in the corner. Dave would just sit there. Django would play the saxophone and I'd try and play something on the guitar.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it's good.
That's a great story.
And I get to see them all the time. They live here in LA, so.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I've actually been to Covent Garden. That's what's really weird.
Yeah.
I like that place. It was really cool.
Yeah, Covent Garden is beautiful.
Yeah, it was kind of like the West Village in New York City, like it used to be, you know, like sort of hippie-ish, a little bohemian, you know, kind of.
Yeah, especially when you get into Soho.
Yeah, there was like a market with an upstairs and a downstairs. It was a long time ago. Actually, it was, God, it was probably like when you were born. It's like in 93. When were you born? Not
91.
Yeah, so that's kind of funny. You went to ACM, it's the Academy of Contemporary Music in Guildford. Before you made that commitment, did you have other interests you were going to pursue, or were you dead set on being a professional musician, or at least dead set on absorbing and learning as much about guitar as you possibly could?
I always knew I wanted to play guitar, you know, but it wasn't my sole, like, it wasn't my only ambition. Like, I was very into sports younger, played football, well, what you guys would call soccer.
Sure.
When I was in Miami, and then basketball, whatever was kind of like easiest and accessible for my parents to drive me to.
Sure.
But my main passion in school was philosophy and literature. So it was always books. But then I realized that when it came to deciding what to do for university, I could continue reading and being a self-indulgent twat or music.
You're awesome. You're so cool. You don't know how cool you are. That's what even makes you cooler, which is really funny.
But it was, I don't know. Not at all. It was like, you know, when you're 16, 17, you think you know the world, and you read too much, and you read Kafka and whatever, and it can get you into dark little places. And I just remember realizing that the one thing that makes me happy is music. And with that, I have a way of making, you know, whether it's 10 people in a bar or 10,000 people on a festival stage, you know, I can make them happy. So it kind of ended up being a no-brainer. Like,
that's really cool.
Want to go for happiness as opposed to getting hunchback, reading books under a candlelight, drinking too much whiskey.
But I think that's like, to have that awareness at that age is pretty unusual. I think you're like probably a very you know, you would never admit to it, I'm sure, but intellectually you're probably like off the charts IQ or something like that.
No idea.
No, I'm sure. No, because you can't have that. That's a pretty deep level of awareness at 16 to have and to act on and to be clever enough to say, you know what, I need to do some. I need to, you know, react accordingly to this to take care of myself. That's a big step.
But yeah, and the thing was more that in order to not disappoint my parents, because I got bullied so much for being a nerd. I just wanted, you know, be academic and everything. And then there was the baccalaureate, the final exam. You kind of, if I felt that if I wanted to do music, I had to prove that I wasn't just going to be a rock and roller and, you know, indulge in sex, drugs, and rock and roll lifestyle, but I'd still keep my brain. So I studied as hard as I could, and I got the maximum. And then I, you know, that's why I wanted to study music. You know, tell your parents that you're still going to kind of not completely let go of your academic side of your brain and, you know.
That's really cool of you.
Balance it out.
I'm imagining that your folks are really supportive of you today and probably were back then as well, right?
Yeah. You know, I guess much more supportive now. No, they've always been supportive. Proud probably now, finally, because, you know, I completely understand my father being like, what are you trying to do? Like, there's not, name me one girl. It's like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Succeed, like, and obviously, you know, with his, there are a few, but not many that they could have known about. So it's like, what are you trying to do? It's like you're venturing into a world that is very tricky, you know. And I was just stubborn, and I was like, I'll do it. Don't you worry.
Hmm.
And you know, being able to afford to fly them over to LA when I was playing the Hollywood Bowl, kind of, you know, showed them that I was going in the right direction. You know, that they, when you get to introduce your mum to Steven Tyler, it's kind of like you're set.
And that must have been, you must have felt like really like kind of validated in a way once you were able to, like, you know, like the words you said, oh, I'll do it. Yes, I will. Like it, you, like you came full circle. You did it. You know, there's no more questions at that point anymore.
Yeah, it actually, there is. There's loads because, you know, I always see our careers as roller coasters. You know, there's moments where when I was 18 doing really, really well, and then you invest in a band or you invest in something and shit goes wrong and you're sitting on your ass again and you got to build up. There's been numerous times where I've almost given everything up and gone back, you know. And I found myself working in bars again in between shows. And I guess, you know, I'm not scared of crashing anymore if it's going to happen again because I know how to pick myself back up now.
Good.
But I think it's a necessary ride that you need to have it in being a musician. The roller coaster experience of music.
Yeah, that's the ride, like I said earlier before we got on the call. I think that's just a ride for everybody who owns a business. I don't know anybody who's owned a business hasn't had that ride a little bit, to be honest with you. Do you are you the kind of person that is okay asking for help for people before you make decisions?
I think I've gotten a lot better at that growing up. I think I might have been a bit more stubborn when I was younger and then realized that, you know, you can't be afraid of asking for help.
Hmm.
And being in a position now where I can also help other people, it's nice when people ask you. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I sure do.
So then you realize that it's not that much of a bad, you know, I shouldn't worry if I do need to ask for some.
Yeah, because I'll be honest with you. I could tell you that, like, for whatever it's worth, the biggest mistake I made was not asking people for help because I just never did that. And if I had done that, my life would have been totally different. I have no regrets, but because I'm, you know, here, I'm happy and, you know, I've got my wife, so everything is cool. But I wish I had asked for help much earlier. So take that for whatever it's worth.
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So ACM is like Guitar Institute of Technology is here, probably?
Well, I don't really know what Guitar Institute of Technology is.
Okay, it's like, they call it Musicians Institute now. It's like where you go and study.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's one here in LA as well.
Yes, correct. That's what I meant, here as in the States. So ACM is like Musicians Institute?
Yeah, exactly like that. We auditioned our drummer there. And when I walked in, it seemed exactly like that, just an American version of it.
That's so funny. I had a question. Did you finish up the program there? And then I searched you out to, I always try to, you know, get some information on people. And I saw this really squeaky clean cut commercial with Carmen Vandenberg advertising.
I hate it.
You know what? I'm watching that and I'm saying, I bet she hates this, that you did it because you're a nice person, because you graduated there, you're an alumni. And I was just sitting there thinking, you know, I didn't know you well, but I had a pretty good feeling for what your personality was like. Man, this is probably like, you know.
And this makes me laugh because it doesn't really represent me much. And if people Google me, I'm like, oh, fuck, this is what they see first.
Well, yeah, because it was funny. Like, oh, I was playing in bars and clubs right before. And I was like, oh, my God, somebody there owes you a big favor. Because I could just tell you were like, that was, you know, like one of those things you had to breathe deep and, you know, just get it over with quick.
I mean, it was fun at the time, I guess. You just grow up and change.
Sure. No, I mean, I'm sure your education was good. I just could tell that video was so, like, just standard academic advertising bullshit, basically, you know? It just didn't seem like it was you.
I don't blame them, though, you know.
Of course not. Yeah. No, it's, you know, you're a celebrity, and so they wanted to, you've got X notoriety for you. I hate to use that word, celebrity. I know you're uncomfortable with it. You have notoriety for having accomplished things musically. So obviously they're going to want to leverage that as much as they can, you know? So Rosie Bones, how did you guys wind up meeting and starting Bones?
We met in Camden Town in London, actually at a Blues Kitchen. It's a blues bar in Camden, and they have a lot of jam nights and stuff like that. And I used to go there all the time, because blues is the kind of stuff that, like, you can play when you've had a little bit too many drinks, and it's just fun because you're getting up on stage with some friends. And that night she was there, whatever, and we just started chatting afterwards, sat down, and it escalated into, like, let's just do some music together, and it kind of just kicked off from there.
Right, and when was that?
It was like a few years back, three.
3 years ago?
I'm not very good at time frames.
Well, Loud Hailer was that last year?
Yeah.
Okay, so, okay, right. Okay, so how did you guys get the gig with Jeff? I saw something online, but, you know, I'd rather hear you tell the story because I don't even know if that's true online.
Well, yeah, the whole story started like, I'd been working for Roger Taylor, who's also a good friend, whatever, and I was at his birthday party, and at a certain point, I turn around and Roger says, "Look, I'd like to introduce you to somebody, Carmen. This is Jeff. Jeff, this is Carmen. She's a great guitarist." And I remember just turning around and being like, the first thing I ever said to him was, "Oh, fuck."
Yeah. You're Jeff Beck. Right. That's about.
That was the first thing I ever said to him. And then, I don't know, we just got talking about, he asked me what my favorite guitarist, and obviously probably expecting me to say some cliche answer. I think I went with Albert Collins or something like that. And then he was like, "Ooh, right. So, you know, your shit." And he just started talking about blues. Yeah, and then there was a time I went to his house, and we just had a little play, and it was great. And then I said, "Look, come down to see my band, Bones. I think you'd really like it. Come down." And he came to the Lexington, which is this place in Angel in London. It's a small pub venue, and, you know, in the guest list we had Rosie's mum, two or three friends, and then Jeff Beck, and we're like, he's never going to come. And there's about 10 people in the room at our show. We had just started kind of like Bones. It's like 10 people. And in the back of the room, there he is. He turns up. And then we're like, oh, shit. And yeah, he loved the show. He loved it and said, you know, took me and Rosie out for an Indian dinner straight after we'd finished playing. We arrived in this restaurant.
Such an English thing.
Me, Jeff, his wife, and Rosie. And yeah, and then that was it. Like, he then invited us to his place and then said, "Look, I've got this tour next year with Buddy Guy, whatever, across the States, and I need an album for it. would you guys like to write an album with me? And we were like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was pretty natural how it just kind of, and then there was the fact that there wasn't much time. So the whole album was written and recorded within 3 months.
Wow. That's amazing.
Our producer Filippo, who's the third member of Bones, we got him involved and he produced it all with Jeff.
That's like such an odd, you got to ask for help because you got help. Oh my God. Yeah. The universe is supporting you. Holy shit. Yeah. That's great. What an amazing story. I'm so happy you got to, that's so cool.
It feels like a fairy tale when I think back on it, but it all went by so quickly, you know, we kind of had to put Bones on standby for a year because then we went touring with Jeff, which was insane. I mean, I had to learn most of his back catalogue and I was playing with people like Rhonda Smith and Jonathan Joseph. So it's like, you know, it was quite kind of hard for me.
Yeah, I would imagine. His catalogue isn't like a walk in the park.
No, the rhythm part, yeah. And, you know, playing in front of so many guitarists as well, I was like, I can't fuck up anything. So, yeah. I had a lot of practice to do and it was great. It was a big challenge, one of the hardest things I've done. I also didn't want to disappoint him because we were like, you know, he's like a mentor, like a friend, you know.
Sure, he's giving you a great opportunity too. You want to rise to the occasion. I totally get that. What an awesome story. That is literally, I think, maybe the best story anybody of the 150 or so guitarists I've interviewed has told me. That is really cool. Well, because it's Jeff Beck. It's just like, you know, hey, yeah, you know, you like Albert Collins. Great, blah, blah, blah. You know, I have to do a tour.
But that's the thing, is like Jeff's always, you know, he didn't want to do an album like the ones he'd done before, which was just like all instrumental and virtuoso and whatnot. He had this concept that he wanted to go back to writing songs like the early days with the Yardbirds and whatnot. And there's a lot of social masters that were on his mind and everything. And, you know, so he wanted lyrics, and like Rosie's voice is so unique. And it, as you once said to me, like it balances out with his playing, and he would. Rosie was incredible for like being able to listen to, you know, the things that he would want to speak about and then, you know, create her lyrics, which were like poems, you know, that would reflect his state of mind or whatnot without, you know, going too far from her own state of mind, you know, because it's still her voice.
Well, yeah, she wants to be authentic.
And we wrote it all at Jeff's house, you know, sitting by the fireplace. Drinking Prosecco. That was literally it.
Is that an English thing? Because my wife likes Prosecco.
No, Prosecco is from Veneto, which is north east of Italy. It's an area where it's made.
No, I mean, is it
an area of France? Prosecco is just made in that zone.
No, I mean, is it an English, like, do English women, a lot of English women drink Prosecco? Like I just
think a lot of people in Europe do because it's champagne's sweeter.
Yeah.
Prosecco can be more dry. And for example, if you get champagne, you have to spend too much unless you get it. Because if you buy cheap champagne, you'll just have a headache.
Yeah, big time.
Prosecco will save you from that.
So it's a good plan B.
But I use it as a plan A.
What were some of the biggest lessons or like, you know, learning things or takeaways you got out of working with Jeff, both, you know, as a player and maybe as working with others and as a, you know, anything else in general?
That first tour, like the band and everything, just, you know, just, it was a bigger version of anything I'd done. So it's like, you have to listen more. Sometimes less is more. Learn a lot. And then I don't know, the thing that I struggled with most, which not struggle, but was just being on stage with someone like Jeff. It's kind of hard to remember that you still have to play because you're just so amazed. I'm like, fuck, bollocks, shit, don't forget to play, because you're just, because I'm just watching him and overwhelmed because his playing is just so unique. I learned from so many people. It's just, the whole thing was just a big learning curve.
So I want to talk about his playing for a second, because it's almost unbelievable what he does. Mm-hmm. I've seen him in concert several times, and I have every single thing he's ever laid down on, you know, in recording, and I've seen tons of video, but it is literally to watch somebody do, it's almost like it's something not on this earth.
Yeah. I think he's one of the few people that can, really make the guitar almost not sound like a guitar. He makes it sing. It does. And I see his playing sometimes in visions of different colors, and they're like, it can be fireworks to waterfalls. You know, he can have that sweet touch, and then he can play some heavy ass shit with his thumb, which it sounds like he's actually sawing the guitar in half. You know?
Well, yeah, and all this is going on without a pick. That's like even next level shit. Like, I mean, it's like just the nuttiest thing. Do you think, obviously he spent tons of time practicing, but do you think that's like just some sort of, and I don't want to take away from the work he's done, but do you think that he has just some special unique gift as well that allowed him to carry that torch? And then obviously by him woodshedding and practicing, he, you know, he was able to bring it out.
Yeah, I think there's some innate talent there, definitely. He also listens a lot, and, you know, knowing him and hanging out with him a lot, like, there's not a single day that you don't see him on his guitar. So, you know, he'll wake up, have a cup of tea, and be sat down playing, you know, with his dogs running around him. And it's just Jeff. So it's, and he works a lot, you know.
Yeah. There's an expression here, you know, school is never out for the pro. And I guess that's a classic example of that, what you're just saying. How, you know, Jeff Beck is playing every day. There's a reason why he's Jeff Beck.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
You know, even before a show, he'll just be in his dressing room going over his parts and, you know,
yeah,
getting ready for the show.
So what are you working on now that you're most excited about?
Well, Bones. I mean, Bones is now, it's my whole life and priority. I mean, we live together. We live and breathe and work and everything together. So I guess that's pretty much me for now.
It's you and Rosie. Is it Steady, the other guys, or is it?
Well, Philippe is a producer, so he's a third of the band.
Okay.
Just that he doesn't come on tour with us.
Mm-hmm.
He also did Jeff's album. And he's a little genius. He's an Italian boy, very smart, very good at his job. And yeah, so we just live together and record in our house. And, you know, this is where we're at right now. We're just trying to finish this year off, do a few things that we've got going on. Video shoots, photo shoots. We're doing a cover for Howard Stern, I think.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
And we're doing a Bowie cover.
That's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to tell people that you could check out Bones online, and I'll say this again at the end of the call, but you can check them out online at bonesband.com and, more importantly, bonesuk.com. And you should definitely check out. They have three videos out, including one called Beautiful is Boring. And Carmen was telling me that it's been out 3 weeks and it's already got 350,000 views. So check it out.
A bit more than 3 weeks.
But more, okay. So check it out and share it. And, you know, they have another one called Pretty Waste, which is awesome. And you guys, you said you do the videos yourself.
Yeah. Rosie edits all of them. She comes up with the concepts. She does all of the visuals and everything. She's a big visionary.
Yeah, that video was great, the Pretty Waste one. And then Girls Can't Play Guitar, which is also very cool. Sorry, Carmen. Lost my place here. So I was talking to you earlier that I thought, you know, you just moved to America. What was it that prompted you to do that? I thought that's such a, you know, a really cool thing, and, you know, I have a lot of respect for you for doing that, to just pick up and, I mean, I know you're used to moving, but, you know.
It's different when you're a child and then you do it as an adult with work and everything.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Well, we really wanted a change. You know, we'd done Bones for a year, and toured Europe and everything. And, you know, we'd all been living in London for quite a while. Rosie's from London. And then we had that year doing the Jeff thing. And at the end of that, we were like, well, you can't really tour America from Europe if you're not based there if you don't have a lot of funds. So we're like, fuck it, let's just pack our bags, go there, see what happens. We'll get US management, we'll get this, we'll get that. And we just set ourselves some goals and just said, let's just do it. And yeah, I think we've been here 9 months and we got everything we set out for. And now we've just got more goals.
That's great.
I think if you believe in something and you've got people that are like-minded like you and you push each other. I'm not saying it was easy. There's been ups and downs and everything. We've had fights for us. But if you've got someone that you can kind of lean on and push each other, then you can get to doing anything you really want.
Definitely. 100% I agree with you. Hey, let's talk about gear for a minute. In videos, I often see you playing a Tele, but mm-hmm. is that your go-to guitar right now?
Yeah, it's my baby. It's an 84 reissue of a 61, and it's beautiful. I love it. Yeah. Well, I also, with Jeff, I play a Strat that Fender made me, which is really cool.
A custom shop Strat?
Yeah.
How is that? It's
great. It's like a Jeff, kind of like a Jeff model, but measured to my hand. I had a smaller neck made for me. Because if you actually compare my hands with Jeff's, his are like this. Like, yeah. I don't know if you can see that. But
no, I can. Look, sure, sure.
They're a lot bigger. And when I had to play stuff, like he plays with his thumb over the neck, I'm like, I just can't reach. And my hands are nowhere near big enough.
Sure.
So we just made a custom neck, which I hope one day, you know, I'd like to work with Fender more and see how we can make it, you know, more of a norm to make guitars that have thinner necks for women or men with small hands, you know, without them being patronizing, because I'm tired of there being small guitars with a bloody Hello Kitty on it.
That's what I was thinking of when you said that. That's funny. Hey, but here's something funny. I forgot I should have shown this. Can you see this?
Oh, wow. You got a Beck Strat.
Yeah. How random is that?
That's brilliant.
Yeah. How random is it? And it's like such an easy guitar to play. I mean, I just love it. It's such, and I don't understand, like it's the regular price of a Strat, and it's got like, you know, the locking tuners, the metal nut. I mean, it's just a wonderful guitar. It's so funny. I just thought of that. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, so your 84 reissue of a 61 Tele, your custom Fender Strat, what would be your number three?
I don't know. I don't have a number three at the moment. I can't remember. Because when we moved here, I had to leave quite a few of them back in Europe.
Oh, I'm sure.
I guess my first Strat is now at Rosie's parents' house, which was American Strat, which I bought when I was like 14. I've got some Sunburst Gibson that I play, but it's so heavy. Those Gibsons can be so heavy, but it's good for recording sometimes.
Sure.
Fender just sent me an American Pro Tele, which I really like.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, very cool. How did you get that 84? Was there any cool story behind that?
Yeah, actually, there's Denmark Street in London.
Hold on a minute. I was talking to the owner of that shop recently.
Tom's guitar?
Denmark Street. What the hell is the guy's
name? No, Denmark Street is a street, like with loads of music shops on it.
Oh, okay. This guy, Chris, I'm sorry, I'm having a brain fart. I can't think of it, but he and I were going back and forth. What's one of the better known ones there?
Well, I go to No Tom's Guitar, No Tom's, which is at the vintage store. I don't really know the other ones.
Okay.
Well, actually, I shouldn't say that because some of my friends work in them, so never mind.
That's okay. So you went there to No Tom's Guitar.
Yeah, and at the time I was doing that, you know, a few things had gone shit. I broke up with my boyfriend. I think I was living on people's couches and waiting tables again. And I just went into the shop and I picked it, like, picked it up, and it was just like it melted into my hand, and I was like, oh God, I love this. And it was just over a grand or something, and I just needed it in my life. So, because I couldn't afford it at the moment, I would I'd wake up really early every day and just sit in the shop and play it so that no one could try it. And then every time I had to go and do something, I'd call them up every half an hour and be like, no, Carmen, it's still here. They're like, please, please, don't show it to anybody. And then actually a few of my friends noticed everything, and I think all musicians, they all chipped in and like helped me get it. And then I managed to pay everyone back in a few weeks because I got some jobs back in and everything. But yeah, it was a few weeks of like pain. I felt like I was being torn away from a lover when I couldn't play it.
That's and then, so cool.
And then yeah, it stayed with me for a while.
That is awesome. What a great story.
Yeah.
I thought of the guy's name. It's Justin Harrison from London Vintage Guitars. Do you know that place?
Yeah. I know that place.
Yeah, that's the guy I was chatting with. What a cool story. That is really good.
Yeah.
Who are your biggest influences on your playing?
I mean, I'm a big blues fan, so it's like Albert Collins, Albert King, B.B. Muddy, even, you know, all of them. They just Buddy Guy as well, like having played with him was one of my, I kind of almost fainted when I got to meet him. Yeah, so blues is and Stevie Ray Vaughan and all those players just always been a massive influence to me. And obviously players like Gilmore and Jeff, like their style of playing is something I absolutely adore.
Yeah, I'm amazed by Gilmore. I mean, he's so economical in that he says so much with so few notes. It's just,
well, that's what I love about him. That's, yeah, like I love less is more. I mean, I can tend to shred when it's, but that's just to prove a point. But I love less is more, and like, yeah, those, it's the quality of the notes.
Yeah.
Sometimes when I always find when guitarists try to say too much, it's like verbal diarrhea.
Oh, yeah.
It's like someone high on coke and you can't really understand what they're saying.
At least you could turn away. Well, you know, I've seen Buddy Guy in concert, man. I saw Buddy Guy in concert, you know, before you were born at the Beacon Theater in New York City. And I've seen him many times since. Do you have any cool stories about Buddy, working with Buddy?
Yeah, the first time I ever met him was on stage at Madison Square.
Holy shit. That's baptism by fire.
That was show number two of the tour with Jeff. And Buddy comes along and he passes right past me. And I'm like, fuck. Gets on the guitar and we're doing this blues song that Jeff hadn't even warned us about. I mean, he warned us just before we went on stage that it was going to be a blues in A. And we play this song and then, you know, Jeff does a solo, then Buddy does a solo, and then Jeff beckons towards me and is like, go, come and do a solo. And my guitar tech's actually filming this. There's a video, a clip of me, shaking my head, being like, nope. And obviously, the spotlight comes on me, and then I get kind of like pushed, and I shyly shift towards the middle of the stage. I do this solo, and you can see from the camera point of view of my guitar tech that just towards the end of the solo, does Buddy realize that it was me instead of Jeff? And
wow.
Then he has this big grin. And then I'm like, and then I just like slowly shift backwards again into my position. I think it might be online. I have no idea where that video is.
Yeah, I just wrote a note to ask you about it after the call because I'd love to see that. I mean, that sounds so awesome.
Yeah, but it's bootleg material, so there's always a bit of restraints in releasing that stuff. I think we got in trouble once for releasing something without permission. So, yeah, it's out there, and it's that was like one of the most amazing moments. And then a few days later, then got to chat to him, whatever, And then, you know, it's been 2 years that we're going to his birthday in Chicago. I was just there now. He was in LA a few months ago, and I went and played a song with him here as well. So it's like,
that's nice. So you have a nice rapport with him now.
Yeah. No, I mean, yeah, I still have to pinch myself in the morning when I think about it.
Yeah, you know, I could see that, but you're also the kind of person, it's really easy to get behind you and root for you, you know? Because you're just like, you have that, you know, you're tough and you're very bright, and I think people, and you're very optimistic, and who doesn't want to, you know, be around someone like that? You're an easy person to help. And I'm not saying, I'm not the guy to like kiss your ass or anything, so.
No,
it's, you're just like an easy person that, you know, people want you to do good, you know, you're because you're, in a sense, you're kind of the underdog in a way a little bit too. Over the last 3 to 4 years, you know, some people have 20 years of experience, but it's not 20 years of experience. It's 1 year of experience 20 times. You sound like in what you've done over the last 3 to 5 years, you've had, you know, 365 times five, you've had 1500 days of really good living and really good experiences. Mm-hmm. During this time, what is something that you've kind of learned about you along this journey?
I've changed. I guess it's only natural for me to change, because it was during the main years of when you do become yourself, you know, from like 18 to 26. And then I've learned, the question you're asking is more about my playing or me as a person?
Well, you could answer it either way. I was asking about you as a person, but you could talk about you as a player too. You know, really, it's just, what have you learned? You know, what's the most important things you've learned about yourself? Like, you know,
I get it.
Yeah.
I think it's like, one thing I've learned about myself and being in this industry is that if you're an asshole, you'll get nowhere. And I've seen that with other people, you know, it's, simple things is like being on time, being nice is what will get you further. Being respectful and just like listening instead of just, you know, hey, look, this is me. Which we all do. We all do that, you know, sometimes. But whether you're in, you know, a rehearsal room or whether you're in a conversation, I think an equal amount of listening is necessary to the presenting your thoughts or playing or whatever. I think I've learned that. And I've learned that there are equally as many good people as there are shit people out there, and just stick to the good ones.
What was your viewpoint before that? Were you more skewed that, you know, you thought everybody was good, or you thought more people were bad?
Just naive.
Yeah.
I guess just going with it. I mean, I guess. Naive. And then you learn from your mistakes, don't you? So you, that you don't make them the next time. And I'm pretty aware that I'll make more, you know?
Sure. Everybody does.
I don't feel like I'm anywhere near being learned.
Yeah,
being
yeah.
The full version of who I will be, you know. I'll probably be like, when I can barely walk, I'll be like, now I know who I am.
If you're lucky. Yeah, I don't think anybody who's like driven ever feels like they are the complete version. I know I certainly don't. I'm always looking forward to, you know, learning more, being a better person at whatever I'm doing, or just a better human being. And, you know, I don't think if you're driven that you're never going to feel that way.
Yeah. And I guess pushing yourself to working on that, whether it's your playing, you know, and your personality, like, you know, every day I learn certain traits that I should kind of change and maneuver myself. And same with the playing. There's certain phrases that I do so much that they're so boring now that I should change and develop. So it's, I think being a musician correlates with being a human so much.
Definitely, for sure. Can you tell me something about yourself that people will be surprised to hear or might find a little odd?
When I'm drunk, I do headstands.
Bravo.
Often after we've packed down on stage, I will get on the drum riser. And I like hiding in small places. And I can be quite shy until I've had a drink.
Until you've had a drink?
If I'm in a social situation with quite a few people.
Yeah, I can see
I'm good at one-on-one conversations, but as soon as there's quite a lot of people. I feel more comfortable on stage with an instrument than I would in a room full of people.
Okay, because I was going to say, you get on stage with literally maybe 20, 30, 40,000 people around you sometimes.
Yeah, but that's fine.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you don't find...
I still get nervous. It's not like a... You get the nerves just before going on. I think they're necessary nerves. I think I wouldn't be having fun if I didn't get a little bit of a butterfly in my stomach.
Sure. I would imagine. So you feel like you're really confident with the guitar so that you don't feel as vulnerable as you do without it.
No. If I know my parts and I know what I'm doing, I feel confident enough to do that, you know. I'm two different players when I play with Jeff than when I play with Bones. With Bones, I'm the lead guitarist. I'm the, you know, that's my band. These are my songs. This is who I am. And I can be a cocky kind of like shreddy guitarist or whatever. With Jeff, I have a different personality. It's a different persona that goes up on stage.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'm here supporting Jeff. I'm his rhythm guitarist. I'm not going to be jumping around and doing all the crazy shit I do with Bones. I'm part of the backbone. You know, it's his show.
Right. I bet you it was probably, in retrospect, good that you got that lesson early on, or that experience to learn that lesson.
Of what?
Well, to know how to be a supporting player. Because I talked to a lot of guitarists, and they say that's such a valuable thing to learn. And you learned it playing with, you know, with Jeff Beck.
Even when I used to, you know, I did a few shows with Dave Stewart and, like, done a few shows with other people. And, you know, that's something I've always realized that I have different compared to other guitarists. When I was younger, I studied possibly rhythm, you know, more than learning all the fancy scales and everything, because 90% of our job is playing rhythm. If you think about it, even in the context of a song.
Sure.
I guess having that awareness from when I was younger was necessary.
It sounds, it was really helpful.
I used to be so shy. I turned my volume down when I did a solo. I used to have long hair and hide behind it, and it kind of all went hand in hand, the cutting the hair, and so I couldn't hide behind it. And then,
good for you,
gaining some confidence.
Good for you. I think that's great. What do you have, a superpower, a non-musical superpower?
I'm a geek. No, I'm joking. The languages, I guess.
Yeah, that is a pretty cool one.
Languages. No, not really. I'm quite good at just sports and stuff like that, just in general. Do you know what I mean? When you're just...
Yeah.
You can... not that I'm necessarily brilliant at any of them, but I can do most. I'm very good at making cocktails. There you go.
That's unusual that you have a musician that's really good at sports as well.
I'm not sure anymore, because I do smoke now and whatever. But, you know, I'll be good at it if we're all having a laugh and we go out and play some football or basketball or something like that. Not American football. That's just like...
I know. Do you have
they freak me out.
Oh, yeah, because you didn't grow up with that.
Nah.
Right.
You have rugby.
Right. I actually played rugby, which is scary, when I was a kid. Do you have any hobbies or interests outside of music? Besides reading. I know you're a big reader.
No, it's that. And then it's like, I'd like to have more time to travel properly, like, see, without it being with work.
Sure.
I love doing hikes and being in nature, breathing pure oxygen instead of the pollution that we have most of the time.
Sure. Yeah.
Art.
You like art?
I love going to museums. I guess that's it. You know, they're all things that correlate. You know, music, I think I've always found philosophy, literature, art, and music, they're all part of one. They all go hand in hand in history. It's just fascinating for me.
I agree with you on that. I think they're all related very much. What's a favorite place you've traveled? You've been all over.
I don't know. I love Japan. Japan is possibly one of my favorite places in the world. Fukuoka, down in the south. It's beautiful. Kyoto is beautiful. Osaka as well. I love the upside down world that it is. You know.
In what way? I've never been there.
I love the fact that they conform with the rules, but in their own kind of manner. Like, I hate jaywalking, and they all obey that kind of sort of rules. That's one little weird thing. And you can't smoke on the street, because then at least you don't pollute the street, whatever, unless you have a portable ashtray, but you can smoke inside in most bars. Just things that, like, just in our society are completely flipped around. It's really interesting.
Yeah, because they
go to work in their suits, and they're also polite, whatever. But when you see them in the evening, they all go wild and crazy on some Japanese whiskey, and it's brilliant.
I've seen that. Like, they had something recently I saw online with, you know, these guys in business suits sleeping on the floor from they were partying out the night before.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I love it.
Who's had the biggest influence on your life?
Initially probably Dave, and then definitely Jeff, you know. But my parents as well, you know, supporting and being as crazy as they are. And I guess Rosie as well, because we're like sisters from another mister. No, We fight, but we love each other. It's kind of exactly what a sister is supposed to be, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you would know. You got two.
Yeah.
So one last question, Carmen. What is your definition of happiness, knowing that that changes, that, you know, you have your definition now might not even be the same thing next weekend?
I don't know. I think something that I don't achieve very often, but just a state of kind of like peace within would be happiness, which is always a struggle, I think, being an artist. It's a pull of many like emotions from one side to the other. So I guess music can give you that. That just sense of serenity. I think we all strive for that in whatever shape or form, whether it's some people do yoga, I might listen to classical music, like finding those little moments in life where you can just obtain that, that's pure happiness. And then the other one is just, you know, having a brilliant show is the most euphoric sensation I think you can have.
When you know you nailed it.
Yeah, and you're just in front of a crowd that's just loving it. I swell up with happiness.
That's awesome. Well, let me just tell people where they could find you online, and if you have any last words, we'll talk about them. So here's where you need to check out Carmen Vandenberg. So first of all, bonesuk.com. It's her band with her and Rosie Bones. They're all original songs. They're currently touring across the country. Any chance you're coming down here?
That's Florida?
Yes.
Not yet. Nothing in the books yet, but we will be. We're in the midst of booking a lot of tours for next year.
Awesome. So, and you could sign up on... Sorry, were you going to say something else? I apologize.
No, that was it.
Check out bonesuk.com because you could sign up for their list to be alerted when Rosie and Carmen are going to be in your town. You could also go to bonesband.com. Check out their videos on YouTube. Pretty Waste, Girls Can't Play Guitar, which they clearly can, and Beautiful is Boring. And also, Carmen is in the video Live at the Hollywood Bowl by Jeff Beck, the DVD that was just came out. So order that today. And any other final parting words?
No, everyone have a brilliant day. Have a brilliant week.
Well, I can't thank you enough for your time. You have been so sincere and so genuine and so raw. And I can't tell you how much I really appreciate that. You're like an awesome person, and I would love to have you back here in anytime you want, but definitely like in a couple of years to see, you know, we can play the highlight reel from this one and see, you know,
where I'm at,
what's going on.
I might be behind a bar again, you know, who knows?
That's okay. You're like entertaining and interesting and smart enough that I would be totally okay with that, if you'd be okay with it.
I might have gotten a cabin in Montana and just hanging out with bears reading books, so who knows?
You know, there's an old Frank Zappa song called Moving to Montana.
Brilliant. That'll be me.
That'll be you. Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did. Thank you so much, Carmen. You are awesome. It's been great talking to you, getting to know you. I wish you nothing but like happiness and eternal success and good stuff. And, you know, you deserve it.
Thank you, Greg.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Go to everyonelovesguitar.com and sign up to get notified about future episodes along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now be nice, go play your guitar, and have some fun. And check out Carmen Vandenberg. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I am out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.